Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, AFC Preview Edition. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's happy week eight, everybody. Coming to you, not live, but recording on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. As always, joining me, PFF analyst, host of the Unexpected Points Podcast, all-around smart, good guy, Kevin Cole himself. What's up, Kevin?
I'm doing well, although, okay, I'm going to let the audience behind the curtain a little bit here, and I did about 3.5 hours of podcasting yesterday, a couple of podcast appearances, my own podcast. Now, we're probably going to we'll get close to 3 hours today with a couple of different podcasts. I got to say, my chair, not great. Not great. Like, I need a better – I got some little neck stiffness going on here. So just so the audience knows, you know, podcasting, this can happen. This is – I call it like a – like a hamstring pull where you let the adrenaline flow, you try to play through it, but there could be certain moments where I tighten up a bit. So I just want everyone to know that, you know, it's not just adoring fans and adulation on social media and groupies and everything else when it comes to podcasting. There's a mental and a physical toll sometimes also that comes with it.
I did see a random tweet from Dr. Evan Porras one time. He said that posture is apparently overrated. So feel better, Kevin. Play through the pain, hurt not injured. And with that, we'll get into the AFC East. The Buffalo Bills, 5-1, number one ranked scoring offense, number two ranked scoring defense. Is this just like, do you really think it is tier 1A, 1B with the Chiefs and Bills, Kevin? Or is it the Bills and everyone else at this point?
No, it's definitely the Bills and everyone else. I mean, just for a pure... Let's get into the nerd shit here. Like, our power rankings, and I think it's the case if you look at the markets now, when you look at point spreads. I mean, the Bills are a 10-point favorite against the Green Bay Packers, right, this week. And I mean, the Packers kind of low-key stink, but they're still Aaron Rodgers there, right? So if you look at the power rankings, it's the Bills. Then it's a couple of points down to the Chiefs. Then it's like a point and a half down to everyone else, according to our rankings, with the Eagles being next. You know, so you could put maybe the Eagles in the same tier as the Chiefs, but it's closer. The Chiefs are closer to the Eagles than they are to the Bills at this point. So the Bills are really alone by themselves.
As Kevin mentioned, Buffalo home versus Green Bay on Sunday night, 10.5-point favorites, game total at 47.5.
Obviously, just for that line, it was 4.5 in the offseason. The look ahead. It was 8, I think, just last week, and now it's up to 10.5. So that's just flying through key numbers.
I don't necessarily disagree with him, and we'll talk more about the Packers.
Like, how can you have any faith in the Packers right now?
100%. So, look, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and even Gabriel Davis at this point, like, just I don't want to live life where you're just constantly checking on Gabriel Davis with him on your fantasy bench. That has to be absolutely terrifying. Unfortunately, Isaiah McKenzie was splitting things with Khalil Shakir, and that was just straight up a bad game from Isaiah McKenzie against the Chiefs before the bye. So can't really ride that train. What's interesting with Devin Singletary, man, is you look at him this year, and actually week 6 was the first time that Zach Moss was a completely healthy scratch, which helps matters. But with Singletary, they've had 3 games this year where they've won by 21, 34, and 35 points, just blowouts. He has not hit 60% snaps in those games. 3 more games where they've won, won by 3, 4 points, and then lost by 2, 73%, 88%, 86% snap rates. Do you see us continuing, Kevin, or do we get the heralded, the much anticipated post-bye rookie bump with James Cook? Because again, if we take Zach Moss out of the equation, we can live with 2 RB backfields, 3-4, or when things obviously get much more mobile.
Yeah, I think we've had ceiling outcomes for Singletary, and we've gotten good, but it's not like we're winning league type of performance from him anyway. No, I think they have to get Cook involved. I mean, they spent a 2nd-round pick on him. This is not even a 3rd-round, 4th-round, whatever sort of pick on him. So, yeah, I expect Cook to be more involved. And the way that offense rolls, the way Josh Allen rolls, the way we like it to roll, quite honestly, is let's not use the running backs too much. Let's use those other guys. Let's throw the ball down the field. And what I would say, I know you mentioned the, you know, Isaiah McKenzie and trying to figure out what's going to happen there. In some ways, I would be hoping for a ceiling, like a better ceiling, maybe for Khalil Shakir, honestly, because I don't see how you keep the guy out of some sort of rotation. And maybe the real upside case here is that he phases out Isaiah McKenzie and he becomes an every down type of guy. That, you know, it's not a high probability sort of thing, but I feel like that is the highest probability combined with upside that you might see going forward.
He's a pretty solid bench stash. Usually the handcuff wide receivers aren't nearly as, you know, reliable as the running backs and stuff. But just looking at it, I mean, it's not the same thing as like a Sky Moore in Kansas City where you have the annoying Justin Watson still hanging around and stuff like that. Khalil Shakir, and I think to a slightly lesser extent, James Cook, not the worst guys to have there, and especially in deeper leagues. Because, hey, if we do see some of that usage changing that our guy Nathan Yonke's tweeting out every Sunday night, once we get that, both those guys are going to be at the top of every waiver wire column. Your second place, 5-2, New York Jets facing the Patriots this week. Patriots still getting the benefit of doubt, 1.5-point favorites. I don't think the Jets have been favored in any of these games that they've won here over the last 4 weeks. Zach WWW Wilson just rolling. That said, game total still at 40.5. I actually, like, usually, Kevin, you're the one pissing off a bunch of fan bases. I had Jets Nation mad at me this week. I tweeted out a video of Zach Wilson saying it's Zach Wilson time, quote by Zach Wilson, showing some of these ridiculously athletic to an extent plays. He's dodging a lot of open pressure, a lot of sacks, making the sort of plays, and I'm not kidding, making the sort of plays that we see Mahomes make. But the difference is it's the first half of the play that Mahomes makes, like avoiding the pressure, actually completing the pass, actually making a good decision. That's where things have fallen off. And it's honestly hysterical sometimes watching Wilson pull off, like, again, some truly awesome feats here. And then just, it's like the no, no, no. But instead of the yes, it's just like, no, God, no. Like, it just never really gets better out there. So, hey, he's had some banged up receivers now. Elijah Moore asked for a trade. The offensive line, you know, looked good on paper to start the year, but now they're turning into a walking graveyard themselves. Overall thoughts on the Zach Wilson experience, Kevin, because again, I'm a sucker for a quarterback that makes a lot of bad decisions out there because it's fun to watch. Obviously, Jets faithful, 5-2. They're hoping that he can actually, you know, be a good real life quarterback as well, even if that's not always the top question on my mind.
Yeah, you didn't even have the like cartwheel fumble that got called back, if I remember correctly, as part of that, which I don't even sure how that got overruled. At least I wasn't watching it closely, so I don't know. So that number two, Ian, never clarify, never apologize on these things, okay? Because you're not getting any credit, because then you're just going to get like Jets fans. They're going to be like, oh, sick backpedal or some nonsense like that. You're going to have that dog doing the backpedaling gif in there like 100 times. No one ever gives credit for apologizing, so double down, if anything.
My bad. That. Hand up, my bad. Call me out. I appreciate it. Someone's got to keep me honest, Kevin.
And then number three, Zach Wilson, I think Jets fans kind of realize that he's not good. Like, he's probably not good. I've sensed that. They are out of defense mode, and it's more like if Breece Hall was still there, then they could have, like, the Breece Hall, it's a defense, it's sauce, it's coaching, it's whatever, you know, New York grittiness, and, you know, whatever. We have this quarterback, too, who passes for, like, 100 yards a game. So I wouldn't worry. That's the problem, right? There's no fantasy goodness to go around with Zach Wilson there. Maybe that'll open up a bit here, but I think it's more interesting what'll happen in that backfield now with James Robinson being there. And for me, I don't know what your take is on this. My take is I think Michael Carter should get more of the workload, should be more of the feature back, might be better just overall than James Robinson. But James coaches love James Robinson. They love this guy. So my prediction, though, is that Robinson will get more work than Carter, and they'll both be kind of useless. What do you think?
I think you're right. It could be more so of a 50-50 thing that when Carter gets the receiving work, which will obviously make him the more fantasy-friendly option of the group. Because to be fair, Michael Carter last year, I stuck up for him a lot. I mean, again, he really did have the yards after contact and missed tackle force numbers of college teammate at North Carolina, Javonte Williams. We just kind of ignored Michael Carter because Breece Hall was there. We wanted Breece Hall to do his thing. This year, though, man, just 3.4 yards per carry, 2.4 after contact in an offense where obviously Breece Hall was making much more out of the opportunities he was given. Look, I don't want to say I spoke this into existence, Kevin, but, you know, I said some pretty damning stats about James Robinson last week. Don't need to get into all those quite that heavy again. But, yeah, he's been bad this year, bad at being asked to do the things that you'd expect him to be really good at, consistently getting yards after contact, having a high success rate, you know, not getting stuffed and stuff behind the line of scrimmage time and time again. Where it isn't close is in the passing game. Carter, 1.26 yards for outrun versus 0.53. We even saw him bust a big play last week. I mean, the guy is explosive out there. That said, you know, a seventh round pick that can turn into a six, not the most investment in the world, but at the same time, they still did have Ty Johnson. You know, there's other guys on the waiver wire and they wanted to go get James Robinson. So I don't want to start either this week. Who do I think is going to win by the end of the year? Michael Carter. That said, like, once the bye weeks are over, Kevin, I still don't even know if Michael Carter is going to be cracking the top 24. Because guess what? This offense, to your previous point about Zach Wilson, has been really bad. It's not that he's been okay. I would love, believe me, if I can find a stat that says Zach Wilson is good, I'll be the first one to tell you guys. But pick one, anyone. PFF passing grade, 35th among 39 quarterbacks, 36th in QB rating, 22nd yards per attempt. I mean, his turnover-worthy play rate is the third highest in the league, and his big-time throw rate is bottom 10, too. We're not even getting the Drew Lock experience here, Kevin.
Yeah, there are no explosive plays. Breece Hall was producing all of the explosive plays for the offense, and you know, James Robinson, I know he had a couple of 30-yard rushes, as we mentioned, that you shouldn't really expect those going forward. You know, James Robinson is not necessarily going to be producing those also. I mean, I'm definitely leaning Carter there. What Carter needs to do is he's one of these guys who breaks a lot of tackles, but then doesn't necessarily do a whole lot after breaking the tackle. So that's what we need from him. He's not the fastest guy, but he can produce a little bit more in that area.
4-3, third place Dolphins. We got Tua coming off the not one, not two, not three, four dropped interceptions Sunday night performance. Made me go ahead, go into our handy dandy PFF statistics, take every quarterback's interceptions and their dropped interceptions. Yes, we track those. How can you do it? You watch the freaking film. That's all. We get kind of accused as like not watching the film. That's what actually builds this, everybody. This year, dropped interceptions. Yes, a little bit subjective, but I'd like to live in a world where we can do more than just talk about passing and rushing yards all day. So we are going to play this game. This year, Tua has 10 combined interceptions and dropped interceptions on 150 pass attempts. Goff has 10 on 212. Matt Ryan, 10 on 297. Matthew Stafford, 11 on 225. So those are the only four quarterbacks with double-digit combined interceptions and dropped interceptions. I will give Tua a little bit of credit because he's got the 9.2-yard average target depth. He's being aggressive with this, which, again, I appreciate. That said, Kevin, for someone who Tyreek Hill called the most accurate QB, you know, alive or whatever the hell the offseason quote was, it's not great, man. And as awesome as this offense has looked at times, like, seriously, their first drives are up there with absolutely anyone in terms of them looking like they're about to win by 50. Haven't seen prolonged stretches of it, really, and we have seen some prolonged stretches of them struggling. So do you think Tua is still just, hey, it's really only his third or fourth game still in this new offense, just some growing pains here, or is this something that we should actually be worrying about? Why is he leading the league and, again, close to leading the league in some of these turnover-worthy type plays?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so worried about the turnover-worthy plays when it comes to fantasy. It's more of a real-world issue there. Those will probably come around, but again, it's not necessarily bad if it's going to cause them to pass more going forward. I think really let's just look at the schedule. They got the Lions, they got the Bears, who are maybe a little bit better. They got the Browns, who are, you know, enthused to give up big plays a lot. So pretty good. I think some fantasy goodness coming from them. I'm excited about that. I'm excited that Raheem Mostert is taking over the backfield there. And yeah, you know, you may only have a couple of weeks before he's, you know, out for the season or something.
He's been returning kicks all year.
Yeah, I noticed that. I saw that. Like, I think it was the opening kickoff, and I was like, what is happening? I mean, he is a great kick return, like, attribute sort of guy with that speed. At the same time, Lord, like, can we throw someone else out there, like Trent Sherfield or someone? Can we get him out there returning kicks? But he ran 71%. Of routes here to only 29% for Edmonds. So Edmonds is really giving you nothing at this point. And I think in these matchups, like, Mostert's kind of startable, like against the Lions and some other teams. So you should be happy if you have him on your squad.
Absolutely. Lions, third worst defense and PPR points per game allowed to running backs. Mostert, over these past 4 weeks, 17 touches, 19 touches, 15 and 20. Looking good out there. I mean, we even had our guy Chris Collins were talking about, like, the one catch he made, like, legit hands out there looking like a receiver. Yeah, he dropped the, I don't even want to call it a drop. Micah Fitzpatrick took his freaking head off. So not going to blame him too much for that. But yes, cozy matchup. Lions.
Still, that was goal line target, right? That was a target at the 1 yard line. We'll take that.
Absolutely. Again, Lions 32nd ranked scoring defense. Only the Bills are implied to score more points than the Dolphins this week. So couldn't agree more. Raheem Mostert, get him in starting lineups of most shapes and sizes. Obviously, Tyreek, Waddle will continue to fire up them. Wouldn't be surprised if Tua flirts with the big game as well. What about Mike Gesicki? Slowly but surely getting out there, finally playing consistently over half of the offensive snaps, back-to-back games with seven targets. He's starting the gritty movement. Can we finally get behind Gesicki a little bit? Because once again, I mean, every single year we make it there out to be 20, 25 viable tight ends. And we were getting some full-time guys, but Njoku's hurt now. Daniel Bellinger's hurt now. Thoughts on Mike Gesicki being someone that we can actually squeeze inside maybe the top 12 sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I mean, inside the top 12, I agree. But, you know, what does that mean, right? It's what we come to when it comes to tight ends. Yeah, I think it's like you have the ability to play him. That's what we're checking. We're putting him in that category. That was a question, right? Early in the season, what we would see now. And that's where he's going to sit probably for the rest of the year. It's just, you know, if you get a bagel at some point or you get a low output game at some point, you shouldn't be surprised by that.
New England Patriots, last place Patriots, 3-4. This week they're facing the Jets in New York, and still the Patriots are favored by 1.5. Game total out of lowly 40.5. What the hell is going on with this QB situation? That seemed like Mac Jones got benched for bad performance, and we can talk about the ankle or how that was the plan all we want, but then the second half plan changed, and just what the hell is going on here, Kevin? Because as much as Bailey Zappe has been fine out there, Mac Jones, he's a first-round pick on the guy. He takes you to the playoffs year one and two. We talked about kind of the struggles early on, but then he plays that Ravens game where he originally got hurt and was actually starting to make some big plays. Three drives, and we're done after Bailey Zappe beats, what, Jacoby Brissett and got another kind of layup win throw in there. Thoughts on this situation? It seems very odd to me, and I feel like if any coach other than Bill Belichick was doing it, we'd be a lot more critical.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on. I'm just trying to think about it logically. If they really – I don't doubt that there may have been a plan to go back to Jones at some point, but you just couldn't do it, right? You could not do it. I know that Zappe fell apart in the last couple of drives, but prior to that, if you would have gone back to Jones, he legitimately was going to get booed coming out on the field, and that's not something that you would want to do. I don't know. Like, my only logical explanation is Bill Belichick is testing out a quarterback change, honestly. Like, maybe they see something in practice, they see something else that they're going for. There's more of a lack of belief in Jones than I would have thought for a guy who was really, really good on 650 dropbacks versus being meh on like 100 dropbacks so far this season. I don't know. That's the only thing logically I can think of, because we saw him moving around. We saw him scramble a couple of times. Right. It wasn't like he was so compromised there'd be any reason. And teams just don't do that, right? And it's not even two styles of quarterbacks we're talking about here. The guys look exactly the same. If you see their headshots next to each other, they look like a slightly different, like, cloned version of Mac Jones for Bailey Zappe. So I don't get it, other than the fact that they're seriously considering a change of quarterback.
And I'm not here to hate on Zappe. As I think Aikman said right in the broadcast, he's a smart guy. He takes what's there, makes the right decision. You hit Ramondre Stevenson when he's the uncovered guy. He gains 20 yards. Hey, those 20 yards count the same as, you know, Drew Locke trying to do Drew Locke things and zipping it in to coverage. I've already, you know, probably beat any podcast with Drew Locke references here in the first 17 minutes. We'll see how many more we can get along the way. But unfortunately with this, I mean, Jacoby Myers is really the only wide receiver I'm going to take a big look at. Scored not one, two touchdowns already this year. It's not even November yet. The year of Jacoby Myers, maybe, just maybe. Gotta love that. And then the backfield, man, even in a game with Damon Harris back, it really was still the Ramondre Stevenson takeover. All right, fine. All right, I was wrong on Ramondre Stevenson. Kevin, are you happy? I'll take my L. The guy's really freaking good. Damon Harris back first game, and Stevenson still takes a 77% snaps, 11 carries, and 8 targets. I guess it's one of those things where talent, we do see quote-unquote not talented running backs went out, but if there is a cheap running back with a lot of steps, a lot of things that need to happen for him to get out there, but if we knew that he had that three-down high upside ability, which I think there were enough signs last year and into this kind of offseason for it to be that, Stevenson was a really, really good target there in the late, you know, seventh, eighth round range where he was really going. You happy, Kevin?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if he was a really good target, but he ended up paying off. He's big and he can catch, right? Yeah. So if you're big and you can catch the ball, those are two key elements. Let me just mention one thing on Jones, and this might be, maybe it's not even like the practice and everything else. You know, 5.8% interception rate, including another interception last night. Maybe that's as simple as it is. Maybe Belichick's like, I've had enough of this. Like, I do not want my quarterback turning over the ball. Highest interception rate in the NFL so far this season. That could also be another part of it. But either way, how they want to play is to run more, to have their defense hopefully not be awful like they were against the Bears. And you're just not going to get a lot of excitement, I don't think, passing the ball in this offense. So Ramondre Stevenson and those dump offs and everything else you can get, he's like the one guy you're leaning on in this offense.
Still not, I'm not shoving him into the top 8-9 yet, because we have seen guys come back from injury.
You can't have confidence. You still, as long as Damian Harris is active, I would not be confident.
We'll say
fully confident.
We can be pretty confident, though, because he didn't have even a questionable designation. He practiced in full throughout the week. So,
but not fully really confident is my point. Belichick, you never – like, I would not be fully confident, okay?
But, you know, vast, vast majority of anything close to a start-sit question, go ahead and just take
– Oh, yeah, you're starting him. You're starting him. But if so, you know, if Harris – suddenly they go some hot hand nonsense or something, it wouldn't shock me.
Luckily, well, not luckily, we want everyone to be healthy, but Ty Montgomery reportedly also dealing with an upper body injury, so that return from IR does not look to be imminent at all. AFC North, first place, Baltimore Ravens sitting there at 4-3. Thursday Night Football in Tampa Bay, Baltimore favored by 1.5 on the road. Game total at a lowly, kind of a mid 45, at least for this year. So first 3 weeks of the year, got my quarterback article I do every week. I try to do some catchy little headlines for each section. I had the La MVP thing going on. Why the hell not, Kevin? You know, he had freaking 12 total touchdowns in the first 3 weeks. You were tweeting about how he had just a bigger overall share of his offense than he even did in 2019. He looked fantastic out there. Now, in week one, he had 3 touchdowns. In week two, he had 4 touchdowns. In week three, he had 5 touchdowns. Ever since, he has 3 total touchdowns. What's going on with Lamar Jackson here? Is this somewhere he's been solved? Is this just a cold stretch? He has left a lot of throws out there on the field. As someone that does my weekly Sheesh article, he's usually in there at least once or twice a week in terms of just not quite being accurate enough to get to his guy. Maybe just unlucky, maybe just a 4-week stretch. I understand we're starting Lamar Jackson, but I guess the bigger question is, Kevin, like, are we getting back to 2019 anytime soon, or is 2020 or 2022 Lamar Jackson probably who we should be expecting to see more weeks than not moving forward?
Yeah, it's probably, you know, somewhere in between, but not as close to 2019 as to the last couple of years. It's been rough for Jackson. It's probably the most deceptive, or one of the most deceptive performances, if you look at like where he ranks on the season. If you look and you say, oh, he's been the QB4 so far this season. Yeah, but he hasn't been a top 10 quarterback in weeks now at this point. He wasn't even the top 20 last week. He had 9 completions in this last game. Mark Andrews had a bagel. I didn't think that was possible. Like, seriously, if you would have put in like range of outcomes for Mark Andrews, I thought this was a like 1%er type of outcome, the way that this passing game has been going so far this year. So yeah, I'm worried. I'm a little bit worried about that. But at the same time, they're able to play pretty well, stay ahead. So maybe they weren't as worried about that. But it's a little concerning.
In the backfield, they did get Gus Edwards back in action last week. He led the way with 2 touchdowns, 16 carries, just 37% snaps. Justice Hill and Kenyon Drake still very much involved. Look, I have Gus Edwards ranked RB23 right now. He's next to a bunch of other guys that are basically in the same category. We have nothing really going for them in the passing game, but we should see 15 to 20 carries more weeks than not. That is valuable. I don't really think he's a must-start fantasy option, though, especially against this top 6 defense in terms of PPR points per game allowed to opposing running backs. And the problem is, man, you look at Greg Roman's history in this offense, they always use committees. I don't think this is something that's necessarily going to grow as the weeks go on. I think what we saw last week is probably going to be what we see more weeks than not from Gus Edwards. Fair assessment for the guy?
Yeah, but I think we have some upside because he's coming back from injury, right? It's his first game back. It's a short week, so maybe not this week we'll see him necessarily step forward greatly as far as his usage, but there is some potential for that. Justice Hill, we had a fumble, I think, from Justice Hill last week. I think Gus is a better runner. Kenyon Drake is Kenyon Drake. I mean, who knows what will end up happening to him? And he got all of their attempts inside the 5, and if that continues, to be honest, I've never been that high on J.K. Dobbins because I've never been that high on the Ravens backfield. Generally, if there is one place where you can get fantasy scoring while it'll be choppy throughout the season, it probably is just getting touchdowns. So if Gus Edwards can secure that and then get the early down work, it's not a bad spot to be.
Cincinnati Bengals. Battle of Ohio here on Monday Night Football in Cleveland. Bengals favored by 3.5, game total at 47. Bengals, man, slow start to the season, but Joe Burrow back-to-back overall fantasy QB1 finishes. Last eight quarters, 781 yards and 6 touchdowns. And the guys even racked up 45 rushing yards and a pair of scores on the ground. Looks way better moving this year than last year. Makes sense. Second year removed from a major knee injury. That was low-key a nice strength of his at LSU. No one's comparing him to RG3 or anyone like that, but I mean, he did fit the mold that we look for in successful rookie quarterbacks averaging at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. So Chase, Boyd, Higgins, this offense is loaded, Kevin. And I guess the question is, like, what took so long for them to look this good? And the way they're moving right now, I mean, again, after that Chiefs Bills tier, like, are the Bengals the next most likely team out of the AFC you think to challenge them? That's sure what happened last year.
Yeah, in some ways, I think they're a better team this year than they were last year. If you look at the defense came on in the second half of last year and through the playoffs. They've been solid the entire year. Not the greatest competition, but still very solid throughout this year. And at least we're getting this now transition starting in week 6, where we're really going full-born. 20% over expectation pass rate the last 2 weeks. Every single snap other than a sneak and a kneel was in shotgun last week. This week, there were a handful of snaps that were outside of shotgun, but most of those came within their opponent's 3 or within their own 3 where they were trying to get out from under the end zone, and a sneak and some other stuff there. Joe Burrow, quarterback draw was called on one play. He is definitely using his legs. He got the sneak touchdown, so they're using him in that capacity. A lot of goodness to go around on this offense. Now, you're not going to get the type of outcomes we've seen the last 2 weeks, but at least we can push this going forward. And I just think it's weird that we're having this deja vu from last season where they transitioned over. It's just funny how much coaches, they like want to play a certain way. They're like, okay, my ideal way to play, run the ball effectively, play defense, make everything easier for the quarterback that way. And then guess what? It's still not a high likelihood that all those things are going to go right. And then once you figure that out, you switch over to, hey, maybe it's good to throw the ball with Burrow a ton. And they were up early and they were still throwing the ball a ton. I think that is very encouraging for the offense going forward to feed all of these different weapons. Because even when you have Tyler Boyd go off, you'd assume there's not going to be enough for everyone else to go around. But if Burrow is throwing enough, you can get that.
Again, it's more so about that usage, like the Boyd touchdown. I think Robert Mays like clipped the all 22 on it. Like safety, just got, turf monster just grabbed him. Like, come on, like that's going to happen sometimes. You look at that Falcons defensive backfield. I mean, AJ Terrell was out with a hamstring injury before halftime. Casey Hayward's on IR. D. Alford, Mike Ford, Jalen Hawkins, injuries all over the place. And before that, they face another banged up Saints secondary that hasn't been all that good. So the actual performance isn't something that we're freaking out about. We already knew these guys were really good. It's just the fact that now getting all that pass game volume, awesome for everyone moving forward. This is your weekly reminder that Joe Mixon remains the RB1 expected PPR points per game and should continue to see much bigger days ahead. And yeah, man, honestly, we have Joe Burrow. You're starting him. Chase, Higgins, Mixon, Hayden Hurst is looking like a top 12 tight end. Tyler Boyd, when you're involved in this offense, can have those boom weeks. So pretty straightforward there. Moving on to their opponent again, the 2-5 Cleveland Browns, 3.5-point home dogs this Monday night. Jacoby Brissett, he did have some nice throws last week. I mean, that touchdown to Amari Cooper, I didn't think that OPI was nearly as great. Marcus Peters acted like, you know, Cooper took his firstborn child out there. I don't know, man. I thought it looked like a veteran move to me. Whatever. Good ball from Jacoby. He had another nice dime down the sideline to Donovan Peoples-Jones. Did take 5 sacks, though. That just seems to be, honestly, like when I watched Jacoby and Geno Smith, and Geno's been way better than Jacoby, obviously, overall this year, but you see real flashes from both guys throughout the game, but then it's just sometimes like just no awareness when they got those blindside rushers coming in. You know, I can only imagine what it's like being in that situation, obviously, but with Jacoby, he did start well this year. Like, I guess the question is, what do you think the Browns, again, 2-5, what would their record be with Deshaun Watson? Like, how different, how much better do you think this offense is going to be here? And as we get closer, what, 4 more weeks?
Yeah, I think it would be a lot better, honestly, only because I think they've been in a lot of these games and they've been close enough where a little, you know, even if Deshaun Watson's performance over Brissett, who was playing pretty well to start the season, even if it was marginally better, let's say, that could have been enough to flip a couple of those losses to wins. And then the last 2 weeks, you know, the real Jacoby Brissett, please stand up. It's happened the last couple of weeks when it comes to sacks. He had an 8% sack rate last week. He had a 15% sack rate this week. That's what Brissett does. He takes sacks. You just don't want those to turn into strip sacks for offensively when you're talking about the Browns and their chance to win. And that's what's bad there. And, you know, I wouldn't say the real Nick Chubb standing up the last couple of weeks, but the downside, the floor case for Nick Chubb is standing up the last couple of weeks, which we knew would come eventually. Again, he's going to regress to a high efficiency type of player with the touches that he gets. He's not going to go back to a league average type of player, but this is well within the range of outcomes, what we've seen the last couple of weeks and should have been expected. I want to see how this backfield is going to play out. I don't know at 2-5 with Watson coming back, if you can like put a fork in the season for the Browns and say we're going to trade Kareem Hunt or Ernest Johnson. But I look to see what the compensation is potentially out there because there are some running back needy teams. But maybe the fact that McCaffrey's already moved and Robinson's already moved has taken away kind of a bidding sort of situation.
To Kevin's previous point about them being in a lot of these games, yeah, that 1-point loss to the Jets, where I think their win probability was pretty close to
99%. That was insane. Like, that was the least probable win of the season by far. Probably the least probable win over multiple seasons.
Falcons, 3-point loss. Chargers, 2-point loss. That was another one that really should have been in the bag, regardless of who was under center. And then, obviously, the Ravens, 3-point loss last week. Patriots are really the only team to really take it to the Cleveland Browns this year. In regards to Kareem Hunt, problem with him this year, man, maybe – is he just getting a little older? He hasn't been the same guy. You look at, again, any stat, PFF rushing grade, 37th among 42 backs, 32nd yards per carry, tied for 24th yards after contact, and 28th in missed tackles forced per carry. I mean, the hilariousness last year was like he looked at the top 10 and all these tackle-breaking stats, and you would see Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and Dearness Johnson all there. It's like, what the hell are they putting in the Gatorade cooler in Cleveland? And yeah, Kareem Hunt has been getting as many opportunities in the passing game, just 2.7 targets per game. But, you know, the last 2 years, he's only really been at 3.4 and 3.2. I'm not blaming it all on him. I mean, I saw those back-to-back plays where I think it was Queen from the Ravens just completely blowing him up the second he touched the ball. So you can also say some things about the offensive line. That said, Nick Chubb is keeping on that high-end efficiency. Kareem Hunt is not. So I do think right now, Kareem Hunt, I will be answering most start sit questions with a sit, especially ahead of this tough matchup. Thoughts on Amari Cooper here? I do think he's going to see some shadow coverage from Chido Awuzie, a top 20 quarter from the fine folks at PFF. One of those things where I think he's a perfectly fine, you know, low-end wide receiver too. When Watson is in there, he'll be an every week starter. But maybe David Njoku being out is going to be better here for Amari Cooper. How are you feeling about his matchup this week?
Yeah, it's just going to be like there's a low floor, but there's a potential to make big plays. And he's good. He's like a good player. Oh, yeah. He gets open. As you mentioned, like if he had that touchdown last week, if that didn't get called back, even on relatively low target usage, he would have had a big game and it would have been okay. And he would have solidified, you know, his pretty high standing so far on the season. So I'm fine. You're probably starting him through buys for sure, unless you're completely stacked at wide receiver. And you can feel okay about doing that. And the one thing about Kareem Hunt is the whole broken tackle thing. Like, he's just not an explosive running back. He lived on broken tackles going all the way back to college. So if he's not getting those broken tackles, yeah, you're not going to get any efficiency on the ground from him.
Last place, Pittsburgh Steelers, sitting there at 2-5. This week, they're in Philly. Philly, 7-point favorites, game total at 43.5. So since Kenny Pickett has gotten into action, he comes in the second half against, as we found out, a very good Jets team. Next week, in Buffalo, good freaking luck. Next week, home against the Buccaneers. That's not exactly an easy matchup, and he gets hurt shortly into it. And then last week, in Miami, in a rainstorm against a defense that's, you know, notorious for sending a lot of blitzes and making life difficult. So not exactly four layups to start the season. Again, this is the only thing that can get annoying with guys like Kenny Pickett, like Justin Fields. You know, you want to give the guy, you know, your Mitch Trubisky or whoever, a chance to go out there and play with the starting job that was allegedly his. But I just feel like you set yourself back a couple weeks when you make the quarterback switch in week four instead of just when the season starts or whatever. So overall thoughts on Kenny Pickett, because he has had some rough matchups. They have a week 9 bye coming up. Again, this is another tough matchup here against the Eagles. And we said this back in week 4 when this happened. Like, this was not something that we're surprised that Pickett struggled with this stretch. Do you see this passing game kind of taking a nice little leap following their week 9 bye?
I mean, a leap. I see it getting better for sure.
A step.
It can't get much better. I mean, it can't get much worse. So I see it getting better. Lots of interceptions from Pickett. He does play like maybe there's an analogy to like a Taylor Heineke sort of situation here where it can be good for fantasy that he's risking things. It's just right now, they're just really inefficient with what's going on. I mean, you look at players like Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson has the lowest yards per target in the NFL right now, and he's getting open. So I don't think that's necessarily the issue. I think some of that's going to come back around, but he's willing to throw the ball down the field. He's willing to throw the ball into spaces where he could get intercepted. So hopefully they'll allow him to do that. And there could be some fantasy goodness, especially in PPR going forward. But like you're saying, the schedule has made it difficult to evaluate him so far. We have a bye coming up after this next week. So that's when we're really going to see his potential down the stretch this season.
You talked about when you take away Kareem Hunt's tackle breaking ability, you end up with a pretty bad running back. I think we're kind of seeing that with Najee Harris as well. Tied for 22nd among 42 backs in missed tackles forced per carry, but 38th in PFF rushing grade. 41st in yards per carry, 34th in yards after contact per carry. So, look, he has looked better over these past 2 weeks. He had a nice reception this past week where he broke two or three tackles on his way to getting the first down. That said, man, even in the receiving game, he's 32nd among 36 running backs in yards per route run. So, I get it. Team sport, below average offensive line, isn't quarterback play hasn't been great. That said, man, Saquon Barkley's making good out of a not great offense. I know the play calling's better. Like, the big issue for Najee this year has been the workload. Last year, only Derrick Henry averaged more expected PPR points per game than him. He's still the RB17 expected PPR points per game, though. So, man, I guess it's just like, this is it. I'm waiting to see more out of Najee, but I don't know if it's even going to be there, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're just going to have to choose based upon matchup, I think, later on in the season, where you have some more favorable matchups and you could potentially get in the end zone. But you know, even on the broadcast, Chris was like, Jalen Warren, everyone loves this guy. Something about this guy. He's like a James Robinson-ish or sort of. It's like everyone loves this dude, the undrafted player. So he's going to be there and he's going to be around. And as long as someone else is around and like there's another body taking carries in this offense, then it's tough. It's tough for Najee Harris.
Najee or Gus Edwards?
Najee, I guess, but whatever. I don't know. I'm not like in love with it.
Agreed. Not Najee or Michael Carter?
Najee, I guess. Najee. I don't know. I mean, maybe this week, Michael Carter, but I just don't. James Robinson. Whatever. I'll say Najee.
That's a couple sad questions. That just tells you guys where we're at there with Najee Harris. First place streaking, 4 straight wins for your Tennessee Titans sitting there at 4-2. Got the great video of, you know, Mike Vrabel talking to his center Ben Jones after the game. Just, you know, When you go through a program like Ohio State, Kevin, it just brings out the best in you. That's just the only thing I can say about Mike Vrabel right there. But, hey, man, it's wild that this team loses A.J. Brown. They don't bring – you know, the replacement for him, Treylon Burks, comes in. He's not really being used all that much, and then he gets hurt. They just keep on winning. And I know they're not the most impressive. It's Ryan Tannehill usually taking care of the ball, and Derrick Henry 4 straight games now with 130-plus total yards. This is still the only offense in the NFL. The entire wide receiver room doesn't even have one top 24 fantasy week. And okay, even if you don't care about fantasy football, all that means is that none of these wide receivers have had even one really productive game just in terms of counting numbers. So, like, Mike Vrabel, coach of the year, I know we're all talking about Brian Daboll right now, but I just think that, man, you just keep going through this, and this guy keeps winning no matter what kind of he gets put in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, I know there are like multiple Coach of the Year awards, but I think Vrabel was Coach of the Year last year, so they probably aren't gonna double dip on a type of award like that. But the thing you're getting here is like even against teams where the defenses and matchups where the defenses are not great for the Titans, like they just don't throw the ball at all. They dropped back to pass 22 times last week. There's 20 total pass attempts, and even those pass attempts, it was under 6 yards per attempt that they're averaging there. So there's just nothing to go around here. And you look at the schedule, we have the Texans coming up here. Oh, so that's probably going to be a ton of Derrick Henry. Again, the big dog shoving it to everyone who assumes he's going to, you know, regress and doesn't have that passing game work, which he's actually continues to get some targets and be somewhat efficient with, is at least on a routes run basis. But then you have the Chiefs and the Broncos and some Packers and the Bengals and some tougher defenses after that. But this week just sets up for another great Derrick Henry week.
He is on pace to catch 37 passes this year. And yeah, it doesn't sound like that much. He's never even had 20 in a regular season before. So again, no one's confusing him with Eckler, but yeah, you get the big dog in space. Good things are going to happen. Texans league worst defense in PPR points per game allowed the position. Henry didn't get to play Houston last year. They had both those games in the second half, but going back to 2020 and 2019, his last three games against Houston, 211 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns, 212 and 2 touchdowns, 250 and 2 touchdowns. This guy has has three straight games with over 200 yards and multi-touchdowns against his defense. Some might say Kings stay Kings. Second place, Colts, somehow 3-3-1 right now, facing Washington in the three-point favorites game, total about 40. That whole rollout of Matt Ryan getting benched was just, my brain was in a pretzel with that all going on, Kevin. First, it's just Matt Ryan getting benched, and then it's like, wait, he's got a shoulder injury. Like, what happened here? Did Frank Reich just roll up into the trainer's room? Matt's like, they're popping his shoulder back into place. You know, Reich puts his hand on his back. Hey, man, it's going to be okay. By the way, we're rolling with Ellinger moving forward. Like, just the whole thing has been wild. I know I saw you tweeting about just looking at the dead cap kind of involved with Matt Ryan. I mean, Frank Reich is basically throwing his last, you know, kind of life vest, his last little, you know, buoy, whatever the hell I'm trying to say here. Sam Ellinger needs to save kind of this current regime's jobs in these last 8-9 games of the season. Do you think he has any chance of hell of doing so?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it sounds like the reporting here, and this is there's some article by Zach Kiefer over the Athletic, where we're just talking about the decision, which I think was a little weird as far as how it was rolled. I mean, Ryan's been awful. Let's not get it wrong, but we're talking about Sam Ellinger here, right? So it sounds like Jim Irsay, the owner, was getting in their ear about it. And it sounded like the Carson Wentz trade was also like Irsay was like, I don't want to say he didn't, like Ballard and Reich were not behind that decision, but it also sounded like he was like, it made him want to throw up even looking at Carson Wentz at the end of that season. So I don't know, Kevin.
That was actually Reggie Wayne looking at Matt Ryan.
I forgot about that. So I don't know. That's what sounds like it might be part of it. It would not shock me at all if they turn back to Ryan at some part during the season, but who knows? Who knows what's going on? The funny thing is, like you mentioned, they're still in second place. They have lost twice now to the Titans. It's weird how they sandwich these games together. Like over the last 3 weeks, they played each other a couple of times and two L's there, which is going to make it tough for them to win the division, but not completely out of it. I don't know. It's a total shit show over there, and they can't run the ball either. I don't know what to say. I think it's like for Pittman, this can't be good. He's not going to be getting feasted on with targets. I was going to come close to having to take an L / capitulate on Paris Campbell, who I said was completely worthless and was just wind sprint master. He had been getting out there and starting to do some things recently. So as far as bad as that and inefficient as that offense had been, Jonathan Taylor, the ship has sailed on that one. So at least they're passing it a ton in PPR to get for them some of these receivers. And that might even be over now.
That's what I was about to say. This is the third most pass happy offense in the league. I don't think I could see them just morphing into the third most run heavy offense in the league.
Yeah,
Taylor,
yeah.
And Sam Ellinger, who, you know, you said last week that Taylor Heineke is like Brett Favre without any talent. Like Sam Ellinger might be Lamar Jackson.
Hey, not any talent. Let's not go that far.
I don't want to put the wrong word in your mouth.
Without Brett, he plays like Brett Favre without, you know, close to Brett Favre talent. I'll say that. Yeah. In his head, he's like VR. He's like virtual reality. Like when we're doing virtual reality and we're Brett Favre, that's how I think Sam Heineke operates his quarterbacking life. He's doing VR Brett Favre.
Sam Ellinger, Lamar Jackson without speed. I mean, you look at the guy's rushing numbers in college, and like this should be the guy that we're getting really excited about in fantasy. Like if we just didn't know this was Sam Ellinger, and I was like, hey, second year quarterback, whatever, coming off the bench, 41 rushing yards per game in college, 33 scores on the ground in 4 years, does run a 4.89, second 40 yard dash. But hey, we saw some of those dual threat flashes throughout the 2022 preseason, had that like 40 yard rush for a touchdown. The guy wants to run the ball, and usually in fantasy, Kevin, that tends to be enough. Do you think there's something here? I know in 10, 12 teams, one quarterback leagues, you know, you're not really worrying about it, but I would certainly, and I'm sure people already have, but Superflex 2 QB leagues, I throw a flyer out there because he does seem to fit the archetype of a bad real life quarterback that can still be useful in fantasy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was going to make a joke in three quarterback leagues. You can start him with confidence, but yeah, I mean, I guess you should definitely have him. I don't know if I'd even start him in a two quarterback league. Well, I guess maybe two quarterback league. You could think about it. We'll see. It's possible, right? It's possible that you can get some fantasy goodness. I am very dubious though on real life decision, like this decision for the Colts. Because if things don't go well this season, I think this is it for Ballard and for Reich. I know there's a very close relationship with Irsay, so maybe they can survive because of that, but I don't know. I feel like the, you know, 99% of owners would say, you've had your time, we're starting over and moving on.
And it's one of those things, look, I've said plenty of, not slander, I pointed out a lot of bad stats that Matt Ryan put up all by himself this season. Hasn't only been on him, though. I mean, look, we were giving the guy some praise. He literally just won them that game pretty much against Jacksonville only 2 weeks ago. This is PFF's 27th ranked offensive line in pass blocking grade. I mean, that's been kind of the problem with Jonathan Taylor as well. When you look at the Frank Reich era, PFF team run blocking grade, second, third, ninth, 30th this season. They're not even averaging 1 yard before contact per carry. I mean, I saw the Tennessee Titans out there punking Quentin Nelson, Kevin. You know, all world just going to lay you out, you know, when you're not looking. Quentin Nelson out there, not been the same offensive line. I think that has low-key arguably been the biggest problem facing this Indy offense this season.
Yeah, I would say fire. I mean, they're probably not available, but fire up your Commanders defense this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big-time sack potential, big-time turnover potential.
Third place Jacksonville Jaguars at 2-5. Their game last week was one of the weirdest ones I've seen of the season. They had so many chances to put up more points on the board, and they just couldn't. Lawrence missed James Robinson, Zay Jones for potential touchdowns. He also hit Zay Jones in the chest on a Hail Mary. To Lawrence's credit, much better Hail Mary after that atrocity that looked like, you know, Andrew Luck post shoulder surgery the first time he tried it. But last play of the game, he hits Christian Kirk with a rope down to the 1 yard line, made a big throw to extend the drive before that on, you know, a fourth and game pretty much. So
a little bit of luck on that one. That was where the defensive back didn't even know where the ball was, because it was just like, wait a second, this is not even close to where the receiver's going. Yeah, so go.
gamer, Kevin. But look, yes. It's just one of those things where, again, I made the comparison once. I'm not trying to be a dick. This guy had some awesome years, but when I see Trevor Lawrence, there just does. He's, to me, he's like a more athletic and just a more, maybe some more arm talent version of Jared Goff. Because when everything is right, like, yeah, you see the throws that made both of them number one overall picks at one time or another. But I always feel like I'm wanting more out of it. And again, we've had a good game or two from both guys this season. I just don't know if we're ever going to see Lawrence really make that leap. I know last week, I think he brought up the point that maybe there's not just going to be this, you know, quote unquote, generational prodigy quarterback out of this class. Overall returns on a growing sample size for Trevor Lawrence. We can't just keep blaming Urban Meyer, Kevin. We've had 7 weeks here now in the Doug Peterson era.
Yeah, I mean, he has been good, though, and efficient in a way where I think Peterson has put him in fantastic position to be successful in this offense. I know some people have complained about this. Is like, again, this is one of my pet peeves. Everyone always complains about not enough like downfield passing in every single offense. And it's like, no shit, man. Like if every team could just say, oh, let's add 20 yard completions to our offense, they would. Like they would try to do that, you know, but Lawrence is just not that accurate. He just sails so many passes, and that's the problem. Maybe there's some way to fix it. He can make some amazing throws sometimes. They're using his athleticism. He got another touchdown in this game. Failed on a fourth and inches, though, so that was another big one that was on the other side. And he's been good in fantasy. He's been good on a like efficiency EPA per play standpoint, but our grading, which grades throws a lot more than anything else, hates him this season. Absolutely hates him. And I think that's what's going to have to come together for him to be that next level player. And we just have not seen it so far, but let's, you know, we're burying the lead here. It's Travis Etienne season.
Yeah.
Okay. Buddy. Yeah, it's buddy. Taken over. We've been talking about it. You and I would say have been ahead of the curve when everyone was almost, you know, bending the knee to James Robinson after those first couple of weeks and being like, yeah, I guess we were wrong, James.
Not here, Kevin. Not here.
I was watching those games and I was like, I don't care that he's scoring 30-yard touchdowns. Etienne has the juice, okay? And he's shown that in this game. You know, don't fumble on the three-yard line next time, you know, but he's taken over and he's got juice for days. He's Minute Maid. Let's like, literally, he is the man, okay?
I said it once, man. It looks like this dude was just born with that golden mushroom power-up that we get in Mario Kart. He's just a freaking – he's electric back there. Jaguars, again, 2021 first-round pick. He's essentially a rookie out there after missing the whole year. Joins Khalil Herbert, Kenneth Walker, and Rashad Penny. Only running backs averaging at least 6 yards per carry. Pretty damn good. Yes, last week, 82% snaps, 14 carries, and 5 targets. Both Robinson and Jamichael Hasty completely out of the picture. If you're any running back on any team – The only time I can remember just ignoring an 80% plus snap running back was Kalen Ballage on like that terrible Dolphins team a couple years ago. ETN, RB1, rest of the season. It's a great day to be great. And yeah, you said last week, Kevin, like I was shitting on James Robinson, you know, just not shitting on him because I get it. Undrafted, Achilles, fantastic story. Love James Robinson. Hope he runs for 6,000 yards with the Jets. Bringing up a lot of bad stats, and you were like, my God, man, how much exposure do you have to Travis Etienne? It's been a good week for Ian's fantasy teams over here.
No, I think you're right. It was just like, I felt like it was personal at that point. Yeah. Like that this guy is like, you know, stole your girlfriend or something like that. I mean, I don't know, but Jermichael Hasty, I think they kind of like what they've seen from him. I mean, he had a big rush there. Maybe they like Snoop Connor too, who hasn't even had the chance to get in there. I think it's fine. I think it's always good. He's not a long-term piece for you, James Robinson. Get a pick for him, send him out of town, and let's get ETN top 10 RB season started.
Per Next Gen Stats, ETN second in the league in rushing yards over expectation per carry. He is indeed good at football. This week, Jaguars home against the Broncos. 2.5-point favorites. Game total, though, lowly 39.5 points. So want to give a quick shout-out to our friends
London,
over...
though. They're like a de facto home team in London.
Oh, it's London. I forgot to note that. So we got another 9:30
They love the
game.
Jags in London.
This is true.
Blake I'm not Wells. Joking. It's like a real thing that because they used to always send the Jags out there all the time because no one wanted to go to London. So they would take away their home games. They like take away all the Jaguars home games and send them out there every year. So legit, they might be like, they're not probably not the most popular franchise in London, but they're way more popular there. It's like, this is probably like somewhat of a home game for them. Go ahead. Sorry.
What was that awful like Mexico City game? I think it was like Cardinals and 49ers when both teams like were in a complete rut. Like it's a pretty hilarious habit for the NFL to just send like
well, they did have Rams Chiefs in Mexico City a number of years ago. Yeah. I remember it got delayed and everything else. So yeah, I mean Mexico City makes so much more sense to actually put a football team rather than in London, but they're infatuated with Europe and they got Germany and everything else, you know, later on this year. Sorry, now we're way off out of our depth here. Go ahead, sleeper of the day.
Quick shout out to our lovely sponsor at Sleeper, my favorite place to go play redraft, fantasy, dynasty, fantasy, whatever floats your boat. Just awesome, customizable scoring and just abilities to make your league and whatever you want to do. But yes, Trevor Lawrence is going to be our bounce back player of the week, continuing to run. He's got that Jalen Hurts and just when you get to the 2 or 3 yard line, you know, running back, go take a seat, take a breather, man. Trevor Lawrence is going to bully his way into the end zone. So to Kevin's point, and I mean, Kevin has actually gone on the record. I'm just, you know, scrolling his Twitter all hours of the day, but hashtag our Jaguars, Doug Peterson, putting them in the right position. So yeah,
didn't go for it at the end though. 4th and 5 with their own 30. I mean, that's a tough one. He would have got crucified. That was like, so he didn't do that. Could have, but yeah, they really could not stop. Like the Giants had no explosive plays, but they were just like, give me 4.5-5 yards every single time.
They're going to put on a show.
I keep on interrupting you and going off on you, but anyway, go ahead. So still our Jaguars. I'm not revoking our Jaguars. Okay, go ahead.
You sure? You done? Okay.
Our Giants.
Home game in London against these Denver Broncos. Trevor Lawrence, bounce back player of the week. All right, your last place, 1-4-1 Texans. You know, we're going to take a page out of Lovie Smith's book and only talk about Damian Pierce here. So facing Tennessee this week, 2-point favorites. The Titans are game total out of lowly 40.5. So I had someone in my mentions point out that you had a discussion on unexpected points, Kevin, about Damian Pierce's missed tackles for us being a little bit more of a style thing than necessarily something that we should be completely crowning him as the next Marshawn Lynch for. He's really good, but you know what? We keep seeing all these rookie running backs be really good, and I'm starting to wonder, is this just the kind of thing we continuously run into where, yeah, the running backs that haven't taken 500, you know, freaking touches pounding at the NFL level are going to be players that are going to be more explosive and look, quote unquote, better at football. So how much of Damian Pierce's success is him? Hey, yeah, the entire NFL missed on him and let this guy fall the 4th round. And how much of it is, hey, this guy's getting 20 touches per game and he does have a style that's a little bit more aesthetically pleasing to forcing missed tackles.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was having more of a general discussion, but Pierce was one of those guys where it's on my radar to figure out how much we shouldn't be wowed by the broken tackles versus the actual production. Now, he did bust off a long run this season, right? He had a run, well, I guess, which one was
like
it?
70
it was,
yards, yeah.
So he had a 70-yard run, so he's up to 4, so he's, you know, 4.8 yards per carry. So it's a solid number there. But if you're going to see, like, plot yards per carry versus broken tackles. Like, it's still the guy's broken tackles are off the charts. It's not a Nick Chubb situation, I guess. Yeah. I would say, where I would expect like broken tackles to necessarily turn into long runs, but hey, we'll take it, right? We'll take what we get there. He's definitely running with juice. He's definitely breaking tackles. This is not a Trent Richardson situation. It's just something to monitor about whether or not in this offense, he can really be an efficient running back, because he's not necessarily going to get the touchdown looks that he needs to in this offense. Also, Davis Mills, Mills Mafia, still reeling and struggling at this point. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not looking too good out there. To be fair, he did lose Nico Collins last week. It's not like they've just gone out of their way.
Actually upset about that. Yeah. There's potential like second order effects on that too. If they decide not to trade Brandon Cooks because they don't have Nico Collins, I was hoping that could happen. And Nico, who had been, couldn't get in the end zone, but had been getting decent usage in recent weeks, could take over as the wide receiver one. That might have all got derailed here.
To be fair, a little bit to them, they did try to obviously draft John Metchie in the second round. You know, they couldn't have predicted he was going to go down with leukemia. So continue to get better Metchie out there. But yeah, we'll see on that trade deadline. Reports have been Brandon Cooks could be out of town.
And they should still do it. They should still do it, even if Collins is out. But who knows?
If he is still on the Texans this week, maybe they try to showcase him. That's a little risky, though. I will probably be answering most start sit questions with Cooks. With the other guy, he is going to have a tough matchup against Christian with the K, Fulton, Titans cornerback. Last year, held him just 2 catches for 18 scoreless yards. Held up pretty well against Terry McLaurin and Michael Pittman as well. This Titans defense, man, they got flamed by the Bills in week 2. Saquon ran all over them in week 1, but they really have settled down, looked a lot better here in recent weeks. So before we move on to the AFC West, want to give a couple shout-outs to our sponsors. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves, buying your first home, plan to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Also, even though best ball mania has ended, Underdog Fantasy is still the easiest and most fun way to spice up your football season with their pick 'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with higher or lower total than that number in this week's games. And you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your pick'em entry. Get all your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. So it's simple to get started. Just head on over to underdogfantasy.com or download the app. Sign up a promo code PFF, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. Not on my ad sheet, but Underdog NFL. If you guys don't follow them and get notifications, you are missing out. Absolutely awesome news crew, head up by my guy, Justin Fan, former PFF Savant Sosa, doing his thing as well there. So, you know, I'm always got my, streaming a fight for some friends. I just had to keep flicking up my notifications because, you know, I'm trying to watch 2 grown men in a cage fight each other, Kevin. That's just what I like to do in my spare time. But just constant goodness coming from Underdog NFL. And you really don't need to have another process for just getting news. They have you covered. Don't be afraid to do that. Top 2 teams in the AFC.
Hold on. Excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, big news. Hold on.
We got breaking news here. We haven't discussed this team yet, but we have discussed their opponent. So this is from Zach Stevens, who is Denver Broncos beat reporter for DNVR Broncos. He says that Russell Wilson, during, you know, press conference, Russell Wilson says that on the flight to London, he was working out and stretching for 4 of the 8 hours from Denver to London. He says he was doing high knees in the aisle while the rest of the guys were asleep. So this is important information to put into it. He's got the Wolverine blood. He'll be well stretched and ready to go for this matchup. This is big. I'm moving Russell Wilson up at least like 3 or 4 spots in the rankings based upon this.
High knees in the aisle. Like, was that just the last straw for some of his teammates? Like, they're trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. And
I thought this was a fake account. Like, I thought this was, you know, those like fake beat reporter accounts, because yeah, he doesn't have a check or anything, but he's got 37,500 followers and it says beat reporter on here. So I assume this is actually real. Oh, hey. This is double breaking news.
Whoa.
This is huge. This might even be bigger than the first part of breaking news. He also, according to Zach Stevens, friend of the pod now, we'll call him Zach Stevens, Russell Wilson ended his press conference with Broncos country, let's ride, after not saying it in the last two press conferences last week. He's back to let's ride.
Hey, let's ride, man. Hey, this is the same guy, Kevin, lest we forget.
Well, he didn't play last week, so maybe he couldn't, like, ride. He couldn't say Broncos Country, let's ride, if he wasn't going to be able to ride, but he's back to riding again this week. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe there's another meaning behind it. We're tracking all of this in the PFF analytics department, the research and development department. Don't worry, guys.
If you guys really want to know what goes into the player grades, there's a lot. So, yes, yeah, remember, this is the same guy.
It's all part of our modeling process. They say, oh, you can't model that. We can do it. We can model the let's ride or the not let's ride. We can put that all into our models.
Same guy that claims he spent 19 or 20 hours a day working on rehabbing
last year. He's doing this for 19, 20 hours a day when he's rehabbing his finger last year.
Two teams on bye this week, Chiefs and the Chargers, sitting atop the AFC West. We'll be back to talking about them next week. With third place, 2-4 Raiders. So kind of a funky team, man. They've got the W versus the Broncos and the Texans, look good enough. They had a 1-point loss to the Chiefs in there. Obviously, very competitive game there. We've also lost to Chargers, Cardinals, and Titans. Which team do you really think this is going to be moving forward? More so the one that we've seen be really competitive with the Chiefs and have this offense led by Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs doing his thing on the ground, or more so, hey, like Bill Parcells says, you are what your record says you are, and the record does say they are a pretty bad 2-4 team.
No, they're good. This is a good team. Okay, Giants versus Raiders on a neutral field. Who's favored in that game?
Yeah, like Raiders by 2.5?
Yeah, then they're not getting over 3. But yeah, they're probably favored by a point or two at least. So, I mean, that tells you they are a good team, I think. I think they're actually a better team than they were last season when they went to the playoffs, believe it or not. It's just sometimes, you know, things don't work out the way you're hoping it will. That said, you know, like, I'm not high on Derek Carr, who I've mentioned a few times. He's not like a playoff, you know, guy who's going to get you to the playoffs no matter what else ends up happening. And they had this really tough schedule situation and a few games haven't gone their way. Again, you have to be able to separate like what's happened from looking forward. The whole power rankings thing, like, I can also sort the schedule by wins, guys, okay, and build the power rankings and then move like guys up or down one slot to do that. We can all do that, but we have to think a little bit more critically about these teams. And I think they're a pretty good team. And what we've seen that in is like, you can't be a bad offensive team and be putting up the numbers that Josh Jacobs is putting up, no matter like what sort of usage you're getting, right? This is not like Najee Harris couldn't put up these numbers with that sort of usage for the Steelers last year. This is a good offense. And that's why a good offense with bell cow usage and you're playing well is absolutely insane. Josh Jacobs, the league winner, best fantasy pick this season so far. I don't think there's really a question about it.
Don't want to, again, hurt myself, pat my own back. I did not recommend Josh Jacobs. I don't know if anyone recommended drafting Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, no one
did.
It was actually illegal to do that in a Bucks fan. There's a pact. There's another thing you guys don't know behind the scene. Like behind the scene, we all have a union that we all got together and we made it actually illegal to recommend Josh Jacobs this offseason.
I did scream to buy it low on the man after the first 2 weeks of the season. So we will take that small W and just continue pressing
forward. You could have done a Edwards-Hilaire for Josh Jacobs switch at some point. That would have been very profitable.
The key is to just make so many takes that, you know, fantasy receipts. People just can't keep up. You're just on to the next losing take before they can find the previous one. So really good thing with this offense, though, is the fact, one, they were good. And also, it's just so condensed, we don't have to worry about it. We have Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs just starting them each and every week. We can't get behind Hunter Renfrow. The problem with that is he's unfortunately the clear-cut number 3 wide receiver. They are not keeping him on 2 wide receiver sets. That is Mac Hollins. It goes a little bit against Josh McDaniel's past. I mean, he was kind of, this was some good research that Joey McFarland did in the offseason, showing guys like Wes Welker and Julian Edelman, these kind of more slot wide receiver types, also happened to be Caucasian, like Hunter Renfrow, if you can put that together. And just, they were able to get on the field and play a lot more than what we've seen other slot receivers and offenses that just take them off the field for 2 tight ends or 2 running backs more times than not. Unfortunately, Mac Hollins, generational talent. You got to keep him out there ahead of Renfrow. Only other thing I would add is with Darren Waller out with his hamstring injury, Foster Moreau came back from his own knee injury, 96% snap rate last week. So the Foster Moreau hype was a little bit out of control last year, but he can still be a top 15, even borderline to tight end 1 here, especially with, again, some of those injuries impacting the position. So Foster Moreau, tight end needy teams, don't be afraid to go out and get him. And I think I forgot to mention Harrison Bryant's another guy with Cleveland and Njoku out. He's another one of these tight ends where pretty talented in their own right. I mean, again, I say it every pod, Evan Silva's guy, at mother effing Mackie winner. We're talking with Harrison Bryant here. But yeah, two guys that won't be leaving the field too often, especially for Moreau in a passing game with some upside. Final team we're going to talk about, you know, Kevin already gave us the big news, but your last place, 2-5, Denver Broncos in Jacksonville this week. Jaguars 2.5-point favorites, just a lowly 39.5 game total. So let's say Broncos country starts riding, man. We start really getting going. What's that even look like at this point in time? Because this is the league's dead last ranked scoring offense. They have scored more than 16 points one time this year. That was when they just completely broke out with 23 points in a loss to the Raiders. So what? If we could be top 20 by the end of the year, man, I'd be pretty psyched. It's sad. Cortland Sutton got really just big, you know, he got big brothered by Sauce Gardner for most of that game last week. Jerry Jeudy did make some nice plays, but he's been inconsistent. The backfield remains a complete mess. Like, I hope Russell Wilson can get to riding again, man. What happened? We'll see. I just want an average offense at this point, because to this point, again, maybe the worst offense in the entire league. That's what the points say.
Yeah, I mean, backfield is bad. Like, now we got Melvin Gordon. I was hoping Melvin Gordon might get phased out, and then you'd have an idea of what can happen. So that's dust. Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, I mean, if you got them, maybe you're forced to starting them and praying. And this is the state that we're at now, where I would actually lead Broncos talk talking about Greg Dulcich. That's where I would lead. If we're talking about fantasy,
that was actually my second bullet. Yeah.
If we're talking about fantasy relevance, I'd be like, okay, this guy has had 2 weeks. He's been tight end 11 and tight end 7. So you're like, let's ride. We're riding Greg Dulcich. That is the story of the 2022 Broncos fantasy season.
I need a 30 for 30 on what the hell Albert O did. Like, just to be a healthy scratch. Again, I was
they
not.
They traded away Fant, too. So you figure that meant they liked Albert O. Maybe they just. I don't know. Because that was before they even drafted Dulcich, right? So.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
I wasn't the guy screaming draft Albert O. I thought when he was going, like, round 16 or whatever, you need a second tight end. Okay. Fine. Yeah. Go ahead. But. You know, week one, he was their lead tight end. I don't think he played that terribly to just not be a healthy scratch. He does offer a different skill set than some of those other guys, but clearly Greg Dulcich has taken that job, and it really was good to see last week a little bit more from him than just that one, you know, broken coverage touchdown out there. So,
yeah, Greg Dulcich, if he can keep this up, maybe there's like head and shoulders if he can get in on some of that Troy Polamalu. Buddy there for head and shoulders. He looks like a great candidate.
Hey, fantastic mustache, too. Can't forget that.
Oh, that's
all right.
That's
all right, everyone. That's going to wrap up the AFC edition. If you enjoyed this, guess what? Kevin and I are going to take a 5-minute break and then talk all things NFC.
I'm going to stretch out. I'm going to stretch out and do some high knees in the in between.
Just get some finger exercises going. We got to type all day, Kevin. Life is hard, as you brought up at the beginning of this episode. Let the people know what you got going on over at PFF.com.
Yeah, so all the showdown content, Unexpected Points podcast that you mentioned. Actually, I had a pretty good pod last night with Sam Schwartzstein, who works over at Prime Video doing their Thursday night stuff, talking about what he's learning over there. And we're also took on a modest task to just come up with a point-by-point plan to solve and fix NFL passing offenses. So we go through a lot of that stuff there. That comes out 3 times a week. Quarterback rankings, different fantasy ceilings and stack stuff that'll come out for DFS the next couple of days. All the normal shit, you know?
Most things I do, Kevin, like I like to think I help a decent fantasy audience out there, but obviously I'm not making much of an impact like in the world or in football, like other than just kind of, you know, tweeting a bunch of bullshit that makes people laugh from time to time. But the one cool thing I got to do back in the day was when the XFL was coming back and starting, Sam was, you know, just at the front of all of that, really designing the rules and how they were going to do everything with that. And I was working at Action Network, and I actually got to talk to Sam about 6 months before the season started, because I was the one sicko in the entire company that was just obsessed with the XFL already and trying to learn as much as I could about it. So I got to talk to Sam for like 30 minutes. I didn't know who he was at that point. And just, my God, man, Stanford grad, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. Offensive lineman
with Andrew Luck there. Like, yeah, with his like resume and how smart the dude is. And I'm glad that he has this opportunity, but I'm like petitioning, Prime to get him to be like the rules analyst type of guy, to actually get him on some of these broadcasts and influence some more of that discussion, maybe get him on that panel. So it'll just be like, you know, it'll just be all the football players and then him on there. 'Cause he's got like muscles and shit. So he can like go on there and actually, you know, put those guys, you know, he could like block them up for a while if he needed to. So yeah, I want, he needs, we need bigger things from Sam. So I'm always promoting him whenever I can.
Oh, he's fantastic. And again, I spent a good hour like just prepping for that call, thinking I found all these holes in their league and stuff. And I was, and Sam had like thought of like 99% of the things I already said, because of course he did. So Kings stay Kings as always. So make sure you guys check out Unexpected Points. And then, of course, I've got plenty of content on PFF.com myself. You guys already know that. So for Kevin, I'm Ian. Thanks so much for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.